This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to another appointment radio event. We like to call it Taking Aim. I'm Steve Woodward. And alongside me is David Hensley. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, everyone.
We are excited to be back in the chairs here at WEEB, and we have been frantically engaging in show prep for hours upon hours, discarding content, adding content, fiercely debating with one another about how we should prioritize all of the rich target environments out there for taking aim on hypocrisy and deception. And boy, oh boy, has it been another banner week for that.
Yes, we've been working tirelessly.
Indeed we have, with all different forms of purified drinking water and granola and other things good for one's health and mental acuity.
That would be Steve. I, on the other hand, did Jolt Cola and pizza.
Well, that's okay. I wasn't going to bring that up, but we always kick off the program every week with the identification of our public enemy number one, numero uno. And of course, it was difficult to narrow it down, but we have come up with this week's loser. I guess I don't want to say winner, because it's actually a bunch of losers who we like to call the Trump derangement syndrome gripped corrupt corporate media collectively. And all of them are setting one another's hair on fire over the wrist-wringing and pearl-clutching associated with the deportation of a illegal immigrant who has been residing in the state of Maryland, who was sent to the El Salvadoran prison with a couple hundred other really bad guys, not just illegal immigrants, but actually terrorists in our homeland, you might say. They've all been shipped away where they belong. But this one particular individual, whose name is Kilmar Garcia, is garnering undue levels of sympathy from the media, which contends that he should be returned to the United States because, yes, he's an illegal immigrant, but he's been living in Maryland and not harming anybody and not doing anything but, oh, I don't know, taking advantage of a lot of free stuff and probably receiving reduced, if not free, medical care and who knows what else for a number of years. Kilmar Garcia is being portrayed as a Maryland man with an autistic son who needs to be reunited with his family as soon as possible. Play clip one.
On that note, the Democrat and media outrage over the deportation of Abrego Garcia, an MS-13 El Salvadorian illegal alien criminal who was hiding in Maryland, has been nothing short of despicable. Based on the sensationalism of many of the people in this room, you would think we deported a candidate for Father of the Year. That's because, unfortunately, many in this country care more about this quote-unquote Maryland father, a legal alien MS-13 gang member, than a Maryland mother and an American citizen who was brutally murdered at the hands of a different illegal alien. Of course, I am referring to Rachel Morin.
Right, and that's an important reminder that in the very same week that they've been salivating about this Garcia, a court ruled and found guilty another illegal immigrant who killed a Maryland resident while she was out on a running trail, Rachel Morin, a mother of five. That individual has now been charged with murder and will be properly imprisoned, hopefully for the remainder of his miserable life. So this is the contrast that the media doesn't see. Any illegal immigrant in our country at any time poses a threat to innocent people. We know that because it keeps happening. They keep doing it. In fact, it happened just up Highway 1 in Lee County in the last couple of weeks, where we had a 41-year-old illegal immigrant in Lee County whose last name is Bustamante, who abducted a teenage girl, took her right out of a middle school campus. How he did that, I don't know. There must not have been adequate security. Took her away from the campus. They ended up in a Sanford motel room where he is now charged with molesting and raping her. Luckily, she is still alive, and he has been apprehended by the Lee County law enforcement. But the point is, never heard of this guy, right? For all these years. I don't know how long he's been here illegally. One fine day, he decides to go out and target a victim. So it doesn't matter if he's been on his best behavior for one or two or three or four or 5 years. He's still here illegally, and now we know that he posed a serious threat. Now, wouldn't the family of this young girl in Lee County have preferred that he had been deported long ago instead of being left to pose a threat to their daughter? I think so.
If the Biden-Harris administration and administrations before them had not let these people in, that girl would not have been raped. That mother of five in Maryland would not have been murdered. And, you know, this just illustrates the left. This is what the left does. The left worships and elevates criminals. I mean, George Floyd, the track dude in Texas, right? All of a sudden, you know, all these people who, if only they weren't persecuted, you know, when, gosh, we'd cure brain cancer.
Well, sure, and of course, you know, we have the tragic case of Laken Riley, the Georgia nursing school student who was attacked and killed by an illegal immigrant.
And this is what these indivisible, hands-off people are defending. When you see these crazed, bitter, clinging leftists up in Carthage protesting, this is what the people are protesting just to keep. They're protesting to keep these illegal aliens who rape. This isn't like maybe, might, possibly, occasionally happen, who rape a middle school child, next county over, boop, plucked her right out of school, killed Laken Riley, killed this mother of five. And this is what these people defend.
And when they're not doing that, they're driving drunk, they're smuggling fentanyl into the country, which, by the way, the fentanyl smuggling has declined dramatically since we've taken control of the border. But nonetheless, we cannot overstate how deranged the media is about this one case, this Garcia case. Play clip two.
Here, a constitutional nightmare, a legal nightmare, obviously a moral nightmare. Cheryl Ifill is the former president of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. She has been sounding the alarm about this. She has argued that Trump will start testing constitutional limits by trying to deport U.S. citizens from American prisons to places like El Salvador, and that Americans, in order to stop that slippery slope where it is, must take on the challenge of caring about and standing up for U.S. prisoners. Quote, many of us have been working on how to legally head off this nightmare, but public outcry and support will be essential. Are you ready to march for the most despised members of our society? Will you call your representatives about those who are imprisoned? If you can't feel for them or their families, remember that this is just a stage in a plan that will land ultimately at our own doorsteps. Every one of us deemed inconvenient by this administration will be under threat.
This is where they're taking the next iteration of this story, is that now U.S. citizens will be the next targets of deportation,
which is 100% incorrect. Once again, illustrating why we the people cannot hate the legacy media enough. I mean, listen to what these crazy people are saying, and they get people roused up, and then it's complete lies and complete propaganda.
So now you have two elected officials in the state of Maryland, Chris Murphy and Chris Van Hollen, a couple of Chris's. Van Hollen, who I believe is one of the senators, announced that he will travel to El Salvador soon to seek the release of this Abrego Garcia, and writes this deranged Jonathan Last, who is one of these Atlantic magazine writers. He says, here is what should come next. An elected Democrat ought to be on the ground in El Salvador every minute of every day until Garcia is brought home. They should be in constant communication with the Salvadoran government and should make an endless list of demands. In short, congressional Democrats should do the job that the Justice Department lawyers, in contravention of the Supreme Court, are refusing to do. They should take it upon themselves to return Garcia. So now we're turning this into a, you know, the courts be damned. We're just going to send rogue members of Congress to El Salvador to demand the release of this guy. You know, I wish they had tried this hard. I wish they had worked this hard, this feverishly, to release all the hostages held by Hamas, all the innocents held by Hamas after the attacks of October 7, 2023. But no, those hostages were, including American citizens, were off the radar.
Well, okay. First, I mean, look, he's a Democrat. I mean, the Democrats were funneling money via USAID to Hamas to fund the hostages, to take the hostages. So, I mean, why would a Democrat protest something that they themselves and their party support and funded? Sorry to answer your question,
yeah,
but
no.
There's the question. I mean,
of course.
Instead, once again, going back to what I said earlier, you know, they're out there worshiping and elevating and, you know, the worst criminals.
So, you know, carry this out to a potential conclusion. Let's say this Garcia is somehow brought back in defiance of U.S. law and returned to the United States. Then what happens to him? Is he just allowed to go on living?
No, we deport him.
Witness protection? No, we're going to deport his rear end.
So here's what. Look, the problem with the media is they outright lie. That this whole story could be reported in 15 seconds. Okay, so the guy that everyone's upset about, Kilmar Garcia, is an illegal alien who was mistakenly identified as Gang A, right? So he was an illegal alien who got rounded up, mistakenly identified and deported as Gang A, boom, right, and sent to this prison. But it turns out he wasn't a member of Gang A. He was a member of MS-13, a peer gang that's equally as violent and horrible. And that's it. That's what happened. And he got deported, and President Trump asked the El Salvador president, hey, you know, misidentification, can you send the guy back? And the president of the other country says no.
He called that a preposterous question.
Right, right. Why would I release a dangerous gang member, right? So we cannot tell another sovereign nation to do so. That's it. That's the story. 15 seconds, those are the facts. And really, other than going, wow, that should have made that mistake, there's nothing to get in arms about, but they leave out the fact that he was an illegal alien and that he was, in fact, a member of a violent gang, just not the one violent gang.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I guess you could make the argument that diplomatically they could work some back channels and at least get this Maryland criminal illegal alien moved out of the super high security prison that he's in now and sent to some other place. I mean, I think that would be a fairly reasonable outcome. Just don't let him come back across
our
border.
Sure. I mean, look, there's some diplomatic things that can and will be done, but you know, it's, look, again, you know, the left and the media, the media and the propaganda from the left got people worked up over George Floyd. They're trying to get people worked up over this murderer in Texas, and they're trying to whip people up over this, and it's just a giant nothing burger. I mean, you know, if you don't want to get deported, and you don't want to get misidentified as being a member of a different gang, then don't be an illegal alien. Don't be a member of a gang.
Yeah, the one thing that I do not want to see is this guy flown back into the United States aboard a Air Force Gulfstream 5 and fed it as a hero as he walks down the stairs and then start making the rounds on 60 Minutes and MSNBC and CNN as if he's some kind of a you know, American hero.
Oh, just wait. They'll be bronze. By the time they're done, they'll be erecting bronze statues to this guy. Heroic statue down Monument Boulevard in Richmond. There'll be, you know, a big statue of this dude.
Speaking of the of a similar story, and our runner up for public enemy number one, this false elevating of these people as if they should be worthy of praise and sympathy. We have the insane Taylor Lorenz. Now, you may recall that she is such an extreme whack job that even the Washington Post couldn't keep her around. So now she's an independent podcaster. Taylor Lorenz is a, you know, your typical 20, 30-something lefty female who, you know, is all in on transgenderism, men playing in women's sports, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and every other extreme left position that there is. She sat down with another random podcaster in the past week and expressed her affection and admiration for Luigi Mangione. Now, you may recall that name sounds familiar because he, of course, is the young man who in cold blood shot and killed on security cams the CEO of United Healthcare late last year in New York City. Play clip three.
So you're going to see women especially that feel like, oh my God, right? Like, here's this man who's revolutionary, who's famous, who's handsome, who's young, who's smart. He's a person that seems this morally good man, which is hard to find.
Really? Luigi Mangione shoots and kills a healthcare executive in cold blood, and he's a morally good man who's extremely hard to find. These are the kind of people who are influencing the mush brains of our American youth on these podcasts. Taylor Lorenz.
So maybe Miss Lorenz will get gunned down in some horrific, horrible murder, and you and I can sit around and laud her and praise her murderer.
I'm sure that, we would never do that, of course, but that's exactly
what she's doing.
What she's doing.
And that's what the left does, whether it's George Floyd, the dude in Texas, Mr. Kilmer Garcia, or, Luigi. That's what they do. They worship and idolize the criminal element. That's what look, this is a mental illness. These people are not reasonable.
And in fact, I'm going to jump ahead, go a little, rearrange our script here a little bit, because the natural segue right now would be to go to this story out of Frisco, Texas, which came up in the past week or so, involving two high school age students attending a track meet. Now, let's give some context to this story. Frisco, Texas is essentially now an extension of the Dallas, Texas suburbs. It is a fairly upscale, moderately affluent area with subdivisions and big high schools and, families with, two and three car garage families. That's the context of this. This is not some urban inner city scenario we're talking about here. And what happens is these two young men encounter one another at a track meet from different high schools. One is black, one is white. They apparently have some confrontation over who's sitting in whose seat, and it ends up tragically with the young black track athlete reaching into a duffel bag that he's carrying to the track meet, whipping out a knife and stabbing in one fatal blow this white young man in the chest. He basically bled out on the scene, never had a chance.
In the arms of his twin brother.
In the arms of his twin brother. This happens in broad daylight at a track meet in Frisco, Texas. And now, where are we? You can't really believe where this is going. First of all, people have donated over $430,000 to a one of these crowdfunding GoFundMe, GiveSendGo it is, GiveSendGo, to support this young man who is charged with murdering a fellow high school student, athlete, 17 years old, Carmelo Anthony is his name. He admitted on the scene to having committed the act, so he remains the alleged murderer, but there is no mystery as to what happened and how it happened.
Has Taylor Lorenz written a story yet, or done a podcast about how nice looking and how lauding this murderer, or is she like a racist, and what murderer she lauds?
Well, praises? I'm sure it may only be a matter of time before she's talking about how, what an amazing
she
guy
better, or she's racist.
Carmelo is, and now here's how brazen, this kid's family is having now had this windfall of $430,000 after their son is accused of murder. Carmelo Anthony's father disclosed in court that while some of the cash will be used for attorney and legal fees to fight the murder charges, that'll be interesting, a good chunk of it will also be used to buy a new home and quote-unquote security for the family amid quote-unquote racist threats. And then it gets even worse. Carmelo.
Wait. It cannot get worse than that.
Here it comes.
Really?
Anthony originally was being held on a $1 million bond, but earlier in the week was released after a judge lowered his bond to $250,000. He will be confined to his home on an ankle monitor ahead of his next hearing. Anthony is claiming self-defense for why he stabbed and killed 17-year-old Austin Metcalf during a high school track meet over what witnesses said was a seating dispute after Anthony entered the team's tent of the other team. In other words, he was trying to sit under a tent with another track team. Why? There's been no explanation. The incident sparked a verbal altercation between the two and ultimately ended with Anthony pulling a knife from his backpack and stabbing Metcalf in the chest, leaving him to bleed out in the arms of his twin brothers before help could arrive. So that's the scenario. That's the story. And yet, the narrative is now shifting to a discussion of attempted accused murderer as victim. More money was raised for this kid on Give, Send, Go than for the other kid.
Than for the victim.
The other kid's family has taken in a paltry $350,000+.
And so people donated $430,000 to this Anthony's legal defense fund, and his family's buying a house and security with it. Because I'm here to tell you, because they said house and security. I don't know what a house costs, you know, in a suburb of Dallas, $250,000 maybe, you know.
I'd say probably more than that. But
anyway, so like a defense to a murder charge, that's going to cost you like $500,000. That's not like a, you know, Better Call Saul. That's to do a defense. What they're doing, I mean, it's like they hit the jackpot. They're buying a house. They're doing all this stuff. No, well, our son, he's got a public defender. That's good enough. $430,000 would not buy a law firm to defend you in a murder charge if you had to pay your own legal expenses.
Well, I'm guessing they're counting on that number increasing. In other words, the funding is going to keep coming in. And now that this
not once people realize they bought a house with it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot.
What about taxes?
A lot of Taylor Lorenzes out there.
So I hope they set aside 40% for taxes. Well, Texas doesn't have a state income tax, but they better set aside 30% for federal tax.
Well, they can't be bothered with that kind of thing. They're busy lawyering up and getting ready to go on a celebrity vindication tour.
The new American dream right here. Yeah. It's sad.
It really is sad. You know, some of the sadness has crept into our community right here in Moore County. And I bring that up only because earlier this week, the opinion section of the Pilot newspaper, and I use the word newspaper in quote marks and italics, because it's a very loose use of the word newspaper. The Pilot's page B2 opinion section. Here are some of the crazies that have been allowed to basically take over the newspaper as their own public group session, group therapy. They can all use each other's. They can read each other's letters to share their grief. during the ascension of the MAGA movement in America. Here's a headline from a guest columnist. Trump administration cutting research that helps Americans deal with severe pain. Now, I can only guess what exaggerations lie under that headline.
It was probably some program where Fauci was torturing dogs to death. That some horrific, like, you know, horrible death that Fauci was causing that any reasonable person would cut. I mean, this person provided no specifics, right?
Well, you know, it's all, I can tell you what it's about. It's about the fact that they want to cut back on the amount of money that is sent to universities for research, because a lot of the times
you mean like $2 billion a year that goes to private school, Harvard, that has a $55 billion? I mean, the federal, Harvard has more money than the federal government. Like, Harvard has a net surplus of $55 billion in their endowment. But yet the federal government, who's $33 trillion in debt, they send $2 billion. We, the people who are in debt $30 trillion, are sending $2 billion a year to Harvard that has $55 billion. Let's just stop doing that.
So, yeah, he writes that after several weeks of funding notice terminations, the Department of Health and Human Services secretary fired thousands of employees across health agencies. Well, as well they should, because they've been the bloat of that these agencies has been well chronicled. Here's another guest columnist from a gentleman that might be too kind, but from Carthage, named Mike O'Day,
who writes,
across North Carolina, farm subsidy programs, college funding assistance, and medical support for veterans are being slashed. Contracts are being terminated, and small businesses in numerous fields are being harmed. The savings by the Department of Government Efficiency purports to be finding in these cuts cannot, does not, and will not outweigh the harm done to communities like ours and the businesses that rely on these programs. The businesses that rely on endless, unchecked, unaccounted for government bloat, waste, and abuse. That's what we're talking about.
Think about what these people want. This guy wants wasteful and fraudulent government spending, because jobs rely on that fraudulent and wasteful spending. That's what the guy's saying. He said that they're cutting fraud and waste, but that fraud and waste, you know, there's small businesses and veteran-owned businesses. Well, I'm sorry, but, you know, we the people should not pay for fraud, waste, and abuse solely to keep, like, companies who clearly shouldn't be around doing fraud, waste, and abuse. It's crazy.
Here's another author, a very upset out of Southern Pines.
Well, there's a shocker.
President Trump repeats Vladimir Putin's propaganda. He says Ukraine is not worth defending and attacks that country's president while praising Putin. Not true. He supports Putin's positions before negotiations begin. He pulls military aid and information sharing with Ukraine, which has been ripping us off, you know, $350 billion-plus dollars later. It's about time. Trump closed down U.S. aid, which, by the way, U.S. aid does not provide actual aid. It is the U.S. what is it? International Agency for International
Development.
Yeah. International Development. A very vague.
International Development, mission. And they were funding domestic programs.
It's
U.S. You know, internet.
He's also upset that we've taken control of the Voice of America and Radio Free Europe. He attacks NATO and our longtime allies in Europe, who have been lousy allies, who have stood on the sidelines time and time again, and who have not paid into NATO what they're supposed to be paying.
Can you imagine? Let's go back to this Voice of America thing real quick. Can you imagine? I haven't listened to Voice. I mean, can you imagine what they broadcast on Voice of America under the Biden administration?
No, I can't fathom
it. I mean, I guarantee you that Voice of America was left of NPR. I guarantee you.
Then the author of this same letter complains that Trump is weakening our military by firing our best military leaders.
So So
is
I
he
say,
is he talking about Mark Milley?
Yeah, the traitor.
Lloyd Austin?
Yeah, Darth Vader.
He seeks the end of the Department of Education.
Wait. And these these generals who wouldn't hang up the or colonels and whatnot who wouldn't hang up the President of the United States and the Vice President of the United States pictures.
Portraits,
They're so petty and they're so insubordinate. These great heroic leaders wouldn't hang up their pictures. That's who this guy's defending. I wonder if this dude was like, I wonder if he left his like home long enough to get his pasty white little person up to Carthage to protest.
Here's another writer from Pinehurst, living among us. Singing the praises of Biden's Inflation Reduction Act and infrastructure bill because it earmarked billions of dollars, which we don't have, which we print, for clean energy projects, which are bogus,
right.
which other grants,
right.
Going where to do what, that doesn't
matter.
Such
as the Social Justice Center in Durham, which, by the way, I read this morning, there was a Social Justice Center in Durham that got a $330,000 grant that was terminated yesterday.
Furthermore, she purports that the Inflation Reduction Act earmarked money for electric vehicles. Well, we see how well they're doing. Improving home energy efficiency.
Why is it the federal government's responsibility to provide or subsidize vehicles? Where is that in the Constitution? I mean, let me find that real quick.
She also says that she's lamenting that the Biden commitment to environmental justice funding.
Environmental they always
is so, now gone out the window.
So what's this lady's name? She lives in Pinehurst.
Lori O'Loughlin.
Lori O'Loughlin, Pinehurst resident who wants environmental justice.
Yes, for our most marginalized communities. In North Carolina, she writes, the Inflation Reduction Act initiated 24 new projects totaling $21 billion invested in almost 12,000 jobs. I'm not buying that for a second.
Invested in 12,000 jobs. Yeah, there was not. There was. Did she any specifics there? Any? Did she say what those jobs were?
She contends that Representative Richard Hudson, our member of Congress,
yes,
that our district has received more funding than any other in the country, but he wants to repeal the Inflation Reduction Act. Well, yes, because runaway government spending and a $36 trillion federal debt is unsustainable, and things have to be cut, especially when they're not delivering on what they alleged to be doing.
Wait. Is she advocating? Let me use a slightly different analogy, right? Let's say you, her, and I. Let's say you, me, and what's her name again?
Lori O'Loughlin.
Okay, Lori O'Loughlin. So let's say us three and Lori O'Loughlin and Pinehurst go rob a bank, right? Let's say we go rob the Southern Pines Truist Bank.
Seems
right?
to be happening frequently.
But and she gets a 38%. She gets a 50% share, and we get a 25% share. So is she going to say that we should rob the bank because she gets a larger share? I mean, that's what she said in her analogy with Richard Hudson. Well, gosh, we got money out of robbing the bank. Therefore, we should rob the bank. You know, our district got money. Therefore, we should have spent $1 trillion of money we didn't have because, you know, we got like maybe like a billionth of a percent of that.
And then finally,
all these people, that's the common thing. All these people want the fraud to continue. Any person in here is making an economic argument. They want to perpetuate the wasteful spending and the fraud. That's the common theme.
And then this other person laments the fact that President Trump and Elon Musk are scouring universities and colleges for vestiges of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And if found, they're threatening the loss of grants if DEI is not expunged.
So
the purge is non-selective and total, like some of the forest fires in California.
No. The purge, So the purge is a result of a Supreme Court ruling that specifically stated these programs are illegal. They're enforcing a Supreme Court ruling. I wonder if this person said Trump and Elon are enforcing that Supreme Court ruling that segregated our schools, and they're scouring the country to root out those schools that want to keep segregating, and that's bad, right?
He's defending DEI, which is affirmative action, with another name, and that has been proven unconstitutional and has been...
He's attacking Trump for enforcing a recent Supreme Court and holding bodies in the United States to accountable to the Constitution. What's this person's name and where does he or she live?
This would be Matt Farina of Southern Pines.
Matt Farina at Southern Pines thinks that the federal government, the president, should not enforce Supreme Court rulings. And I wonder if, what's his name again? Matt Farina.
Matt Farina.
I wonder if Matt Farina would have felt the same way when they're enforcing the Supreme Court decision, which integrated our schools. Or is he just selective on what Supreme Court rulings should be enforced?
Apparently, but his concern, and apparently the basis for his letter, is his concern that Trump's shotgun approach to anything DEI might require American Roman Catholics, you're going to love this, might require American Roman Catholics to remove from their prayer Lamb of God, or in Latin, Agnus Dei, from the Mass under the threat that he will order the IRS to revoke the tax-exempt status from the church and require the church to pay taxes to help eliminate the national debt.
These people are mentally ill.
That is about the most twisted logic I have ever seen. DEI does not...
Matt...
Farina.
Farina of Southern Pines.
The exposure of the false mission of diversity, equity, inclusion has nothing to do whatsoever with the Catholic Church, with any religious organizations at all. I've never seen that one before. That was a nice try, but sorry. Gotcha. Let's keep going because time, it is precious, it is a wasting.
We have dallied.
No. I think we're on to the good stuff here. I want to get to this story about the employee in the Social Security Administration, whose name is Greg Pierre. He has been trying to block the Trump White House from rescinding Social Security cards and the numbers that go with them for illegal aliens and others who are ineligible for Social Security.
Another person who wants to perpetuate the fraud.
He had to be essentially perp walked out of the building because he was standing in the breach. And it was so egregious that even the Washington Post made him famous for exposing the fact that this person was working inside the government to deny a duly elected president and his staff the opportunity to fulfill a promise he made to the American people. The Social Security system has handed out millions of cards to people with birth dates that give them unbelievably high ages of between 100 and 159 years of age. This shows at best, and I'm reading from an excellent independent journalist here. Now, where did his name go? Well, I'll find it later. Anyway, I think it's Greg Sulzer. He says,
by the way, I got to paint this picture. Steve is the most organized person on the planet. Steve is the person that we all have to thank for, like, the agenda and all this. But he really does. He has, like, a stack of stuff. And he's sitting there frantically going through it and pulling articles out. And like, oh, yeah, no. So I just wanted to paint the picture of, like, to, like, both of our listeners as to what's happening here.
Well, we want to be accurate and we want to be informed. That's why we're here. But anyway, this practice of handing out Social Security cards to people with ridiculous dates of birth shows at best how sloppy record keeping is within the agency. The public must file everything in triplicate, but the public servants have millions of people in Social Security who no longer exist. The government employees say, well, not all of these Methuselahs are receiving pension checks, but there are other benefits to having a Social Security number, such as the ability to get a job and perform banking.
Or vote.
Illegal aliens deserve none of these privileges. So last week, the Trump administration declared ineligible more than 6,000 illegal aliens ineligible for Social Security, thus ending their free ride. And now the aim is to get them to self-deport. Self-deport because... The free ride is over. The reason for being here, the dinner bell is not being rung anymore, And now it's time to go bye-bye.
It's even worse than that. There's been a subsequent article. Musk came out, and they've got proof that the Biden administration intentionally put 2 million illegal aliens on Social Security. And you want to talk, the best thing to do to protect the Social Security Trust Fund is to get the fraud and abuse out of it. And that's what the Trump administration is trying to do. And then the legacy media lies to the people. Then you have people up here in Carthage protesting, hands off my Social Security, when in fact, the thing that's risking, the thing that is going to crush the Social Security Trust Fund isn't the people who legitimately retire. It's the 2 million illegal aliens that the Biden administration put on Social Security. And it's all the people, the government, in order to keep the unemployment rate low, they put them on Social Security disability. Then they remove them from the labor force, which artificially keeps the unemployment rate low. That's the scam. The federal government's doing it. The politicians are doing it. The professional bureaucrat class are doing that. And it's robbing you and endangering your Social Security. That's what Trump's trying to end. And people are attacking him. And these crazy people write letters to the pilot because, quite frankly, the publisher and owner of the publisher and editor of the pilot are kindred spirits. These people all want to keep the fraud going.
Of course.
Because that's their economy. The economy they want. Trump wants to return manufacturing, have a true economy, not an economy of everyone's wandering around Walmart and Target all day because they're fraudulently getting all this Social Security and Social Security disability and stuff. It's insane.
And of course, the other institutions which are absolutely panic-stricken about facing potentially greater accountability for all of the federal funding they receive are the universities, the most prestigious among them, including Harvard, which is being threatened by the Trump White House, rightfully so, with losing their valuable tax exemption. And currently, they have seen $2 billion in federal funding frozen for the time being, until Harvard is willing to take steps to make changes to its hiring, admissions, and teaching practices, and also to, for once, begin denouncing the anti-Semitism that it seems to be rampant across its campuses. Harvard became, this past week, the first major U.S. university to reject the administration's demands, accusing the White House of trying to, quote, control its community. Its community, that's a lovely word, isn't it? And then in a speech, Trump threatened to go beyond withholding the federal funds and said he would target Harvard's tax-exempt status. Losing the exemption could cost Harvard millions of dollars a year, and then, oh no, it might actually have to tap into its own endowment. Guess the size of its endowment.
$55 billion.
Around $53 to $55 billion. Billion with a B. Gosh, that's, and yet they're afraid of losing their federal funding.
So here's what's crazy. So let's say, first of all, they are, that's a recent Supreme Court decision. By the way, Harvard and UNC last year lost a Supreme Court decision because both of them were unconstitutionally taking race into consideration for admission. So Harvard, along with UNC, got their ass handed to them for discrimination, right? But a separate court ruling ruled that affirmative action programs are unconstitutional. And DEI is a form of you know, affirmative action.
Entirely.
And the Trump administration has rightfully said you are ignoring a Supreme Court ruling that's you are unconstitutionally discriminating. So I want to make two points on this. Harvard wants to continue their practice of illegal discrimination, right, based upon skin color, sex, gender, based upon protected classes. What if Harvard was trying to protect segregation? Do you think the same people who are defending Harvard would say, no, you must enforce that Supreme Court ruling, once again showing the hypocrisy of the left?
I doubt it.
So that's point number one. Point number two is Harvard has a $55 billion foundation, right?
Endowment. Yes,
The United States government has a $30 trillion deficit. So that's you and me. So they're taking money from you and me, the federal government that has $30 trillion in debt. They're taking $2 billion a year from the upside down federal government and giving it to Harvard that has $55 billion in the bank, right? So they're taking your and my money and we're $30 trillion in debt. And they're giving it to this institution that has far more liquidity than the federal government. And that's not acceptable. We should not be giving them $2 billion a year.
No, of course not. But it's again, it's this whole mindset across this whole discussion that we've had this morning.
They want the grift to continue.
They cannot fathom that the free money, that the spigots would ever be shut off. It just drives them crazy.
It's the same thing as Sand Hills Community College. Sand Hills Community College, you know, they got a $50 million, $55 million endowment. And, you know, they go to the people and say, hey, we want to do a bond issue for this and that. I am glad that they are spending money out of their endowment to pay for that, to pay for those two new buildings.
Well, that remains to be seen, but it certainly is one of the options going forward with the innovative high school project. That's correct. Now let's go from one example of out of their mind crazy lefties to another. We travel across the fruited plain to Colorado, where legislators are weighing a bill that could strip parents of custody for, wait for it, misgendering their children. The bill's text deems that mispronouncing and misgendering a child exerts coercive control by a parent. That's interesting. But it is making its way through the state legislature. So it's called the Kelly Loving Act. The Kelly Loving Act. In its text states that dead naming, that's a new one, misgendering or threatening to publish material related to an individual's gender-affirming health care services will be deemed coercive control and will influence the court when, quote, making child custody decisions and determining the best interests of a child for purposes of parenting time, end quote. So in other words, the parent is suddenly the problem when it comes to dealing with children who, sadly, are in fact dealing with mental illness, and that needs to be the first concern, and yet their parents are being taken out of the equation by lawmakers in the Colorado Congress and House. That it's just you can't even make it up.
So that whole thing is absurd. That thing is absurd, and the only thing I have to say is if you live in Colorado, move. I mean, just move. I mean, that's sort of and the Colorado is getting more and more crazy. And the best thing to do is just move. I mean, like everyone's moving out of New York. All the productive people are moving out of New York and California. If you are a hardworking, productive person, move out of the state and let it collapse under its own weight, because that's just insanity.
So where this is going is the bill has passed in the Colorado State House and is headed to the Colorado Senate, where Democrats hold a 23-12 majority. If it clears, it will almost certainly be signed into law by Democrat Governor Jared Polis.
Soulless?
Well, yeah. Soulless. Or maybe soulless. Or how about clueless? Anyway, that could become a reality in Colorado.
These people have no soul. These people, I mean, think about that. They just took away parental rights. Basically, someone can groom your child, convince your child that he's a she, and you know, Mary became whatever. Anyway, and then if you say no,
Maurice,
no, yeah. No, Mary, you're Maurice, then they're going to take your child away from you.
Yeah, just like that.
Right. Right. No, Mom, I think I'm a girl. No, son, you're not. Now, you know, go back outside and play. Oh, okay. You know, that's proper parenting, right? But you won't even be able to do that. You know, if your kid comes in and, "Mom, I think I'm a girl." "No, son, you know, you're a boy."
Well, the presumption is that parents are always going to react to their children's, you know, and we've all of us who have engaged in parenting know that there is not always a clear path toward dealing with whatever issue a child is confronting, whether it's bullying or transgenderism or just the normal growing pains of being a kid in middle school and high school. There are no, you know, there's no playbook for any of this. Parents have to deal with it based on their own experiences and on their own intuitions. That's just, you know, a known fact. So we've got coming up very soon in the United States Senate, perhaps even in the next couple of weeks, this SAVE Act, which you may have heard about, which passed in the U.S. House, and basically it says this: it ensures that only legal, with an L, legal U.S. citizens can vote in elections. And now this measure, which is obviously long overdue, awaits Senate action coming up. And a recent Rasmussen poll shows that the Senate is getting loud and clear instruction on what it should do. 64% of voters believe Congress should enact the law requiring proof of citizenship in order to register. A clueless 26% disagree. Of course, we know who they are. You'll see them out on the streets protesting. In a broader sense, this Rasmussen poll finds that voters overwhelmingly consider it important to keep illegal aliens from voting. A recent national telephone and online survey finds that 75% of likely U.S. voters believe it is important to prevent illegal voting, including 51% who say it is very important. And there is that 22% who don't think it's important at all.
Right. Who
let everybody
those?
Vote.
I'm sitting here in bewildered amazement. Who? I mean, you got to be like, I mean, wow. I just.
Well, we know who some of them
are. I was going to say they have to be anarchists, but 25% of the people aren't anarchists. I mean, anyway, we can press on.
No, we know who they are. We know who they are.
No, you're right. They're the hardcore. They're the bitter clingers. They're the people. They're the hardcore left. It's a coalition of the old, you know, well, never mind. We got to press on.
But we know who they are, actually. They are the people in the Biden administration and Democrat members of Congress who stood by and allowed our open borders to exist for years and years and years. Because why? They wanted illegal immigrants in the country to do what? Vote.
It's the hard left.
Period.
It's the bitter clinging hippies from the 60s. It's the anyone under 40 who's part of that. They're just part of the radical LGBTQ or some other, like-minded organization.
Or maybe they don't have minds. That's the problem. See, here's something that we're pretty sure Kamala Harris. Remember her? I think she ran for president.
I forgot about her.
Here's what she's going to be thinking about probably in the coming week. This just in from Politico. Political influencers in California are greeting Kamala Harris's potential bid for governor with a shrug.
I was so looking forward to that.
While registered voters in the state react more passionately. Insiders report feeling indifferent more than any other emotion to a hypothetical Harris run.
It would be so glorious to watch. I want to see Governor Kamala of California.
But this is funny, and it's also predictable. Registered voters were more likely to characterize their reaction to her possible run for governor as joyful, outraged, or hopeless.
The whole range of emotion.
So, she has not said if she's going to jump into the race, but it sounds to me like, let's see, one group in the know of Politico's was notably blasé about the prospect, 36% choosing indifferent to describe how they'd feel about her hypothetical bid.
I am so hopeful. That would be glorious. 4 years of her governor would just be awesome to watch from afar.
Of course, there are people who think she ought to run for president again, but we'll take that up on another day. Mr. Hensley, it's been another great show. Great having you here this week. Everybody, thanks for joining us. We are here every Saturday at 11 a.m. And I am Steve Woodward. He's David Hensley. And we're here to do one thing. We are here to take aim.